This is Teddy Roosevelt, just back from charging up San Juan Hill. Damn it, Professor Buzzkill was already at the top, collecting historical evidence, busting myths, and taking names. I have to admit that he's a worthy competitor, and a damn fine rough rider. Join me in listening to this episode. It's sure to be bully.
Yes, here we are, I'm Professor Buzzkill, and today we have Dr. Carrie Lee Merritt with us on the line through the goodness of the interwebs. Dr. Merritt, how are you? Thanks for being on the show.
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
You just recently published an article in the Smithsonian Magazine about the fact that we need a new Civil War documentary, especially in the United States. Why do we need one? If we do need one, we have to explain why Ken Burns's one, the multi-part PBS one that's so popular, why it needs to be replaced.
I think we obviously need a new one because Ken Burns was of course, released in 1990. So that's almost 30 years ago. You know, so much scholarship has happened in that time alone. And as we know, what the public knows lags even, you know, an extra 10 to 20 to even 30 years behind what scholarship is happening in the world of history.
Because it takes a while to filter down through the academic press, to the popular press, to teaching classrooms, that sort of thing.
Absolutely. And so what we're seeing here basically could be up to about 50 years on certain topics that the public literally doesn't know through any kind of format other than possibly what they're getting in textbooks. And so to update this, and I have to say, I'm not just trying to tear down Ken Burns. I love
that's right.
Growing up. You know, this is part of the reason I'm a historian. As a young teenager, when it came out, it drew me into the stories. It drew me into thinking about that era in a very real and different way than I had encountered in a history class itself. I think the medium is incredibly important and powerful. And you know, but there are a few things to critique about it. Certainly, in hindsight, this far afterwards, and primarily. For me, at least, is the heavy, heavy focus on almost solely military history and this kind of overarching feel good, you know, conciliatory narrative towards the end where it's, you know, well, this is all kind of done for a reason. And now we're one great nation. And that's not the reality for a whole lot of Americans. And and, you know, the story of Black Americans particularly, but also Native Americans, immigrants, laborers. Mm-hmm. Women, these are all largely left out of Ken Burns's documentary.
Well, I think it's interesting two things. One is that you say it's because there have been new discoveries made, new analyses done, new scholarship completed, but it's also because, you know, it's almost 40 years old.
Right.
So let's talk. What do you think about the? Let's talk about some specific, you know, historical inaccuracies in the series. First of all, let's begin at the beginning. What does it say about the Civil War's origins that should be said differently?
It absolutely, in the first few minutes of the opening, attributes the cause of the Civil War to, quote, states' rights, instead of what we all know now, you know, almost complete consensus by any historian worth their salt is it is absolutely the only correct answer here is slavery. Slavery caused the Civil War. And so that's the biggest thing to really change for me is to put the focus back on slavery.
Yeah, it's amazing that it says that right in the beginning of a war that began about states' rights and something else ends about, you know, emancipation. When, well, in reality, as we've shown on this show many times with other experts, is, you know, the origins of slavery, and then the lost cause myth famously covers that up in the early 20th century. And that's still with us for so many people.
Right. And I think maybe one distinction to make for the general public is that when we're saying it's caused by slavery, that doesn't mean it starts as a war for emancipation, but it is still,
you know,
I think that's, a way that historians need to convey that better to the public, though, because I think that's part of the reason a lot of people can't conceptually understand that you can say it's about slavery when Lincoln and, uh-huh. and Republicans weren't going in saying that their goal was to free slaves.
No, after all, the Emancipation Proclamation doesn't come about till much later in the war.
And doesn't even free all the slaves.
No, that's true. Yeah. It takes a lot more to do. And then also doesn't give them full civil rights until later.
Right. And so I think this new Civil War documentary conceptually would also then show all the new research that the enslaved actually freed themselves in many ways, not only by shirking work and you know, stopping raising cotton and only raising food for their families, but by completely subverting Southern society when most of the men were gone, taking over plantations, taking over factories, and just escaping in large numbers and thousands to Union lines. And many of the Black men then, of course, joining the Union Army and ending up comprising 10% of the Union Army.
10%? Wow, 10%. I didn't know it was that high. Mm-hmm. It sounds low, but it's actually very high.
Right. That's a lot of Black men who helped, especially in those final years of the war, really win the war for the Union.
Well, speaking of joining the Union Army and winning the war for the Union, one of the things that comes out so strongly in your article, and of course, this is what I had to be reminded of, this was that the Ken Burns documentary almost completely concentrates on military affairs, on battles.
Exactly. And this is done with some historians involved, some PhD level historians, but most of this focus on military history is conveyed through the narrator Shelby Foote, who in himself.
Yeah, now that alone is interesting.
Right.
He alone as a narrator is interesting.
Right. So Shelby Foote is not a historian by degree. He doesn't even have an undergraduate degree, but he is a journalist who, and a descendant, I should say, a descendant of very rich slaveholders in Mississippi. And he really kind of wins the Burns' hearts, I think, as they're making this, because he is just such an intensely interesting, you know, character. He just pulls you in. He's got this thick Southern accent, but he comprises so much of that documentary. And what he's saying, largely, a lot of it's not accurate, but more importantly, the parts that are inaccurate are really kind of, lost cause narrative stuff. It's, you know, he's lauding the Confederacy, talking about how wonderful it is, moving it into not a racist kind of affair at all. Really talking up General Forrest, one of the bloodiest and racist Confederate generals. And so there's a whole lot of problems.
And that's not mentioned at all. Yeah. The fact that he's the bloodiest racist of the war. Yeah.
So a whole lot of issues with the emphasis on Shelby Foote. One videographer went through the entire thing, and I think Shelby Foote gets about 47 minutes, I think, of airtime throughout that documentary.
Well, that's amazing. And what that means is he's sort of more than half of the narrative, certainly more than half of the Confederate narrative, if you will. And the other side, so to speak, is then left with very little.
Right. And the one female and the one black person in the movie, Barbara Fields, who is longtime, amazing, prolific scholar of slavery, of Reconstruction, Civil War, and race itself. She, in contrast to Shelby Foote's 45 to 47 minutes, gets about 8 to 9 minutes of airtime. And she is a PhD level, Ivy League trained, Ivy League practicing professor.
Yeah. Now it's, of course, possible that a journalist could have spent a lifetime doing historical research and, come up with a reasonable narrative of the Civil War, but it's not likely that any person, unless they're a professional full-time historian, could keep up with the scholarship and the new discoveries and the new interpretations.
Absolutely. And I have nothing but respect for people who work themselves to become historians. But I do think that professional training, that our graduate school training, does allow us an extra level of I guess intellectual tools is the best word, of to sort through and explain very complicated events that are all connected in different ways, to explain that to people. And I think it teaches you to think in different levels, to think philosophically more about history. And unless you have that training, you know, there is a difference. And I think that the role of people who have had this training, the role of people who have graduate degrees in history, you know, they can't be left out as much as they were left out in this film.
No, yeah, that really is surprising and upsetting, especially for the profession and for the fact that, you know, students come to college thinking one thing or one handful of things about the Civil War, and then, you know, have to learn a whole new handful of things about the Civil War. And that's one of the reasons why we get this, you know, cultural debate in quotation marks about revisionism.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. What are some of the other aspects of the war in mid 19th century American society that were left out of the series?
Certainly, Western historians in recent years have really pointed out how they were completely left out. Anything going on with indigenous peoples or even the Western front of the war itself. You know, what's happening in that area of the country throughout those years. Labor, you know, what's going on with labor and immigration, even on the Eastern front. You know, tons of labor mm-hmm. strikes are affecting how the North is handling the war. Tons of labor strikes in the South is affecting Confederate policy. Again, gender is talked about a little bit. You know, high class women and a few abolitionist women get a place here and there. But overall, you know, we don't really have an idea of what life is like for the average woman, whether black or white, during this time period. Right. And, you know, I think probably more just social history would be great. You know, what is that? That's what life is like for soldiers. And many of the times these are literate soldiers, right? Not even the run of the mill poorest soldiers or immigrant soldiers. Or black soldiers for that matter. No, so what's life like on a daily basis for any of these people who are generally left out of the narrative?
Yes, and in some of your academic research, you've handled these matters, and we hope to talk about it in a later episode. I was going to say, you know, what's amazing is we know so much more, and there's so much more so better conveyed to the public about the social life during World War II. And industrial relations during World War II, and you know, Rosie the Riveter during World War II, than there is about the Civil War. It's almost as if everything about the Civil War, you know, everything at home is fine, and everything at home is just ignored.
Right, and it's the absolute opposite, especially in the South. I mean, you literally have people starving to death by 63 and certainly by 64. When the Freedmen's Bureau comes in at the end of the war, their first role is to basically prevent both blacks and poor whites from starving to death.
Well, PBS has recently released a multi-episode series on Reconstruction, of course, the aftermath of the Civil War. Is that better?
I definitely think that it is better. And of course, you know, this is
certainly 30 years fresher, but
yeah, right. It definitely has the help of the 30 years, the turn that history has taken in those 30 years, and all of the new kind of, you know, just blossoming fields of African-American history and you know, rich women's history has certainly helped inform this iteration of documentaries. But, you know, it touched on a lot of different perspectives. I think it was very good in showing a whole lot of different voices, different classes, different races, different genders. And it also showed a lot of cultural history. So it had some range. It gave you the bare bones of what was going on a political level and what was happening, you know, from the federal government down, which is very, you know, that's the necessary base that you really need for any kind of history. You've got to know what's going on that level. But they were able to still add in a lot of cultural history. So I really like that. If I was going to be making an additional one, you know, again, I would go back to that social history. What's life like on a daily basis for most Americans? You know, whether you're a poor sharecropper trying to get by, or you're a factory worker in the Northeast, or you're somebody out on a plot of homestead land trying to make it in the plains. You know, we just want to, we need, I think, to give the public kind of a better idea of what life was like. I think that's what draws people in, right? The narrative draws people in, stories of people. And so many Americans cannot relate to the constant great white man, founding fathers kind of narrative.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we complain about it on this show. We complain about that in so many contexts. By the way, Buzzkillers, we have put a link to the, you can see the PBS series on Reconstruction online, and they now have a handy link you can just click and watch. And we've put that in the blog post on this episode. But Dr. Merritt, what if we're going to have a new Civil War documentary, what do you think it should be like? What should it include? Should it be like the Reconstruction one, or should it go even, is there even room for improvement?
I personally, and I know a lot of historians would probably disagree with me, I want to make it even more commercial, than something on
PBS. Oh, I see.
I want to get kids excited. I want to get teenagers excited, people really excited and into it, whether that means bringing in star power, whether that means bringing in, socially conscious athletes that are making appearances, and we can cut to, them going out and doing their bits in communities and in schools where they're talking to kids about history and seeing what's being taught, and kind of contrast that with, well, here's the reality of what's happening during that time. And the reality of what's happening during that time still fully informs what we're dealing with today. Every problem we're dealing with today on a social level, on a justice level, from the carceral state to the racial wealth gap, to severe income disparities because of job and education disparities. All of this can be traced to slavery and the Civil War and its aftermath. And so that's why we've got to convince the public that this stuff is interesting and it's relevant and it's completely applicable to our daily lives now.
Okay, well, this is a good place for us to take a little station ID break, and we'll be back in a moment with Dr. Merritt about a new documentary for the Civil War.
Hello, this is Lady Buzzkill. If you simply must follow my husband's deluded podcast hobby, you can also find him on Facebook, Twitter at BuzzkillProf, and Instagram at Professor Buzzkill. You might go to ProfessorBuzzkill.com if you're so inclined, and support him on Patreon. Subscribe to his email list, if you must, and shop the Buzzkill bookshelf. The only thing that seems to keep him from making more noise and frightening the horses is that the Professor Buzzkill Show is part of Entertainment One's podcast network. And of course, it's available on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and all major podcast apps. Finally, I suppose I should thank you for listening. So, thank you for listening.
Okay, we're back with Dr. Merritt talking about the need for a new Civil War documentary. Well, you've given us a good explanation of what a new Civil War documentary should be like before the break. What difficulties can you imagine in getting such a documentary produced? I imagine things, I hadn't even thought of star power, like you mentioned, and I imagine that would be not only difficult, but very expensive.
Right. I think the biggest challenge to any of this, because I've been trying to read up about the industry and learn as much about the industry as I can, and the biggest challenge is funding. And, documentary filmmakers do not make a huge bundle of cash. They're paid basically, they're probably pretty middle class unless you're way up there somehow.
And I don't think Ken Burns is anymore, but that's because of the royalties.
Right. And I think he's only like maybe, got $1 million or $2 after all of it.
Right. Yeah. And barely a millionaire. Yeah.
Right. But getting funding is the biggest challenge I've heard from everyone I've talked to. Mm-hmm.
And presumably almost every funding source is going to say, well, wait a minute, we already have the Ken Burns one. We don't need another one, which is the entire problem you're arguing.
Right. And then they want some kind of control too over, what you're actually looking at and saying and that kind of stuff. The funding, and you have to get funded at several different steps of the process. So you're constantly scrambling for funding. And if you're, if you're pitching an idea that's radical in any way, some places are just not interested. So you got to get creative, I think, in the ways that you're seeking out funding. the thing I mentioned about athletes, actually, I think is really interesting. A lot of those guys are opening their own production companies now and are looking to fund more progressive films, more educational films. That's an area that I'm certainly exploring. But, you know, I think making a film with a better understanding of our current situation, like I said, you know, labor problems today,
right,
looking at the carceral state, the criminal justice system, the racism inherent in that, to the racial wealth gap. Like, this is why mm-hmm. all need to know what's going on during the Civil War and what it meant, what it stood for, and what its failures were.
And the structural origins of it all. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, well, how do you think people might react to this? Because as our listeners know, I'm not an American historian. I did Britain in the 19th century in my graduate work. So I've sort of, and I haven't forgotten what I learned but about American history, but I was certainly not an expert. I was surprised when I got on social media, for instance, and found how many lost causers and all those sorts of people were still out there on Twitter and Facebook and all kinds of places. And of course, the Civil War statues controversy recently has been flared up again and things like that. Would there be a societal reaction, do you think, that says, look, we've done this, the Civil War is over, let it rest, facts are facts, history are history? Or you think some people might welcome it?
I think there's a lot of older white people that are going to be, you know, really, really angry that anybody's challenging anything about it. And especially in a way that, you know, showcases some groundbreaking progressive scholarship. And they're definitely not going to like it and push back against it. But I think what it'll do is bring people who have, again, not seen American history reflect their cultures, reflect their background.
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah.
At school, right? It's going to bring in pretty much all people of color. It's going to bring in poor people. It'll bring women back into the narrative. And I think that's a big part of why, you know, children and young people are just not interested in history, because what's taught in K-12 in a lot of places in this country is still that great white man political narrative, and they're not learning anything about them, anything about themselves, their backgrounds, their fathers, their history, and they're hungry for that. I mean, we see that in the popular pieces we put out today. When we're talking about Black history, that is a hugely important topic. That stuff sells.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Even in venues, even in sort of examples like we recently did a show with a professor who told us about the Harlem Hellfighters graphic novel about an African-American hero from World War I. You know, that's a huge bestseller, but an awful lot of people, including me, don't know about it.
Right. People are hungry for this type of history. They really are. There's a market for it. But I think we also need to think about medium as historians, right? I think we like to blame people don't like history. People aren't interested in history, and it's the way we write. Well, maybe it's not just the way we write. Maybe it's the fact that we're writing at all. Because what we see, again, shows like yours, podcasts like yours, from other historians. I'm trying to start my own YouTube channel now and do something similar video. You know, this is the stuff that people, and especially younger people, are attracted to. This is the stuff they want to show or have their students listen to in class. Different mediums attract that younger generation.
Yeah, that's what one of the things you and I have both been seeing on Twitter is that lots of people come on and say, well, you know, historians have distanced themselves over the generations. Historians have distanced themselves from the public. They only write for each other. They don't write for us, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And here are all these zillions of historians, at least on Twitter anyway, saying, no, we're right here talking to you.
Right.
But of course, you're right. We have to keep up with the technology, move to YouTube, Instagram wouldn't be good probably, but move to YouTube, move to other venues and try to keep up. The public is always ahead, so to speak.
Right. And I think the people that are writing those articles about the decline of history. Those, you know, they're so locked in ivory towers that they really, it's definitely a demographic right there that are writing these articles. They don't know what's going on social media or kind of in the real world or with anybody under 50 for that matter.
Well, let's hope that a new Civil War documentary is produced. Let's hope, of course, that they contact you and contract you to play a part in it. And the only thing that's left for us to say is thank you, Dr. Merritt.
Oh, thank you so much. It's great to talk about it.
And Buzzkillers, we will talk to you next week.